Fellow Freedom fans, David Allen Carmichael back here with my Faith and Freedom Show, engaging the culture on the issues of the day from a constitutional basis, biblical basis, the basis of right versus wrong. It's Preservative Talk Radio. Find out more about me and what we're doing here at PreservativeTalkRadio.com. Find out how to communicate to us there at PreservativeTalkRadio.com. Talking about the Patient Protection Affordable Health Care Act ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court that occurred late June 2012. The last segment I was talking about their comments about what they can and cannot do, what the U.S. Supreme Court can and cannot do on these matters of controversy. Chief Justice John Roberts said, "Our deference in matters of policy cannot, however, become abdication in matters of law. The powers of the legislature are defined and limited." Now, how can they say it? Just see, earlier they quoted, well, if it looks like they can sort of do it, then they can do it. Well, here it is. The powers of the legislature are defined and limited, and that limits are not to be mistaken or forgotten. The Constitution, depending on how the Constitution is written. And again, that was Marbury versus Madison in 1803. John Roberts says, "Our respect for Congress policy judgments thus can never extend so far as to disavow restraints on federal power that the Constitution carefully constructed. The peculiar circumstances of the moment may render a measure more or less wise, but cannot render it more or less constitutional." So said Chief Justice John Marshall. It said, a friend of the Constitution, number 5 in the Alexandria Gazette, something he stated July 5th, 1819. And he was defending his decision in McCulloch versus Maryland. And Chief Justice John Roberts went on to say, "And there can be no question that it is the responsibility of this court to enforce the limits on federal power by striking down acts of Congress that transgress those limits." Again, Marbury versus Madison is the benchmark. So now throughout this, it was a little bit, this is just my own personal opinion on how they approach this Patient Protection Affordable Health Care Act decision. I thought they were excessively pragmatic, even to the point of error. On one hand, you're going to see, if you stick with us and really look at it with us, and if you'll actually read the case, I really encourage you to do it. So on one hand, saying we cannot, there was a, what they call the Anti-Injunction Act. There was a bill that Congress passed that tells, you know, actually in keeping with Marbury versus Madison, that Congress has a power to make lower courts. So if there's an issue of controversy, a court could entertain the discussion, even if it wasn't something expressly given to the U.S. Supreme Court in Article 3 of the Constitution. Congress can actually make some lower courts and give them particular matters that they can have jurisdiction over. And that means also they can tell a court, hey, you can have jurisdiction over all these things except this. We're not giving you, it does not include jurisdiction over this particular thing. And what they've done is they've told the courts, because raising revenue is an important thing, nobody is allowed to sue, or the courts are not allowed to hear a case that would stop a revenue collection, a tax. Nobody can file suit against the law of Congress that would stop a tax. Your remedy would be basically to vote in somebody new next time and they can repeal the law. That would solve the problem. But for the near term, if we impose a tax, we've got some spending obligation. We're going to make sure we're collecting money and you can get even later. You can sue later to get your money back, but you can't sue to stop us from collecting because there is a remedy. That's a principle of law you can read about in Sir William Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England. That there's a whole bunch of things that the only thing that you can really use extraordinary measures to stop, or certain laws that you can ignore, are those things that have grave immediate consequences on your life, liberty, life and liberty, which is something is not recoverable. But when it injures your property, that's recoverable. You can sue for damages. Not only can you get your property restored, you might even get restitution beyond the property value. So that's a maximum law, principle of law, that is in keeping, or it supports this idea of having an Anti-Injunction Act. But what the Supreme Court said is this Anti-Injunction Act doesn't apply because Congress has said that this is not a tax. This individual mandate is not a tax. They've said it is not a tax. So we can entertain the discussion. They later said it's unconstitutional as a measure under the Commerce Clause. They said it's not a tax, this is a commerce instrument, a commerce act. So this Anti-Injunction Act doesn't stop us from looking at it. But then they said it has no authority under the Commerce Clause to do what it just did. So it's therefore unconstitutional. But they said, but we don't have to render it constitutional if we consider it a tax. But if you consider it a tax, you can't entertain the case. So there's a built-in sinister, I think, sublime influence on what's happening, what you're seeing. And this is something you're not going to hear from any other, possibly any other broadcaster. There is a spiritual dimension to everything that goes on in our world. But in particular, what you're seeing right now, this is something you're not going to hear from anybody else, most likely. You might hear it. Hopefully you do. There is a spiritual influence on here. So some of the stuff that we're throwing darts at is chasing the wind. It's a spiritual dimension that you're not necessarily going to prevail in this with regard to a intellectual discussion, because there's a fog, there's a pandemic of dementia that's sweeping the globe, sweeping North America, and it's influencing those who are in government so that they can't even see what they just said. The only reason we're entertaining this discussion on this case is because it's not a tax. Congress says it's commerce. And it's unconstitutional as commerce. But so that we can render it constitutional, we'll call it a tax, because taxing is within Congress authority. I don't know if anybody's picking up on that. We'll see. The individual mandate, okay, we're coming back to this. Again, this is talking about the, right now I'm going to go to a part of the section. I kind of talked about the introduction about how the U.S. Supreme Court was addressing this issue of the Patient Protection Affordable Health Care Act. So we're coming back to this place where they go beyond the summary and they start getting into the details, but they summarize again. Congress enacted the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, 124 statutes, the public U.S. Public Law 118. The act aims to increase the number of Americans covered by health insurance and decrease the cost of health care. The act itself said it was intended to cover all Americans. How's that? That's pretty sweeping. The act's 10 titles stretch over 900 pages and contain hundreds of provisions. You know, you can get a lot done when you jam with noise. Sometimes it's hard to weed through the thing and find the substance that would make it right or wrong. We'll see. This case, and again, right or wrong, I'm saying if it doesn't fulfill the law, if it's actually a violation of law, it's usurping law and undermining that which is God's minister for our good, then it is wrong. That's just the result. This case concerns constitutional challenges to two key provisions, commonly referred to as the individual mandate and the Medicaid expansion. The individual mandate requires most Americans to maintain minimum essential health coverage. The bill said all Americans. So this changing of language in a summary format is wrong. It's when you begin to see the destruction and disintegration of law is when instead of actually quoting something to let it speak for itself, you restate it. You actually bring in a new definition. You're actually bringing in new words as if the U.S. Supreme Court is rewriting the legislation. That's what it appears to me as I'm examining this. They say the individual mandate requires most Americans maintain minimum essential health insurance coverage. I don't know in history that anybody has been required to have health insurance to partner with a group of human beings with regard to what's going to happen with their medical needs, whether or not they're going to go to a doctor. The mandate does not apply to some individuals such as prisoners and undocumented aliens. Okay, what about a documented alien? Would it apply to a documented alien? Would it apply to somebody from France? In fact, there's probably people from 26 different countries around the globe that it certainly would apply to whether or not they've paid into anything in the United States. And you know what? I don't think that came up here, but it is a part of this, and most people don't know it. Would it apply to those who are not in the federal U.S., who have not opted into the benefit program, the voluntary benefit program of Congress? Would it apply to them? Maybe they're not allowed to go to the doctor anymore unless they opt into the social welfare program. So going back to what Chief Justice John Roberts said, many individuals will receive the required coverage through their employer. What if they don't have an employer? Or from a government program such as Medicaid or Medicare. What if they're not participants and have no intention of participating in Medicaid or Medicare? Are they allowed to go to the doctor? But for individuals who are not exempt, that means very expressly, specifically cut out to being discretionarily exempted. What about those who are accepted from the requirement because they're not part of that civil structure? But for individuals who are not exempt and do not receive health insurance through a third party, the means of satisfying the requirement is to purchase insurance from a private company. So they're saying that you have to, or you're being forced to purchase healthcare, or we're going to take some property from you. That's really what it comes down to. But let's see what they say. The payment, which the Act described as a penalty, is calculated as a percentage of household income subject to the floor based on a specified dollar amount, ceiling based on the coverage, annual premium an individual have to pay for qualifying private health insurance. Now, I'm going to stop here again. One of the principles, and you think, why are you going into this? Is this really Christian? Actually, I have a Christian, because of my Christianity, I have a duty to evaluate this. Equal justice under the law. This is, and I'm just telling you, I don't care. I mean, I'm living a life that a lot of this craziness that's going on in the political sector doesn't apply to me. It reaches me, it affects me in many ways, very negatively, but it doesn't matter. I'm willing to take the hit. Let me just love God to walk humbly and do justly. I mean, that's my perspective. That's what I'd like to lead my family in. Let's fulfill that which God has called us to do, notwithstanding what's going around it. So personally, I don't care about this. But because part of my ministry is to examine these things, this has just exactly contrary to equal justice under the law. What you're doing is examining and classifying people according to their economic status. Why don't we move to India? There's a caste system here. And some will be particularly affronted by the power of the sword because of their class. So there is a class warfare essentially going on. And others will be coddled because of their class. In fact, in this democratic society, those who are coddled increasingly become the majority of the population. I would think, this just seems reasonable, that if you can coddle 51% of the populace, that you can just about get what you want. It may not be true, I don't know. So that payment, which the Act describes as a penalty, is calculated as a percentage of household income. So here they're citing the statute. Let's see what it says. Okay, they went to section 5000A. Of the bill. In 2016, for example, the penalty will be 2.5% of an individual's household income. How are they going to know what your income is? How do they know? Let's just say somebody standing on the planet, how do they know you have any income? Well, you're required to file a tax return. Is everybody? Oh, people would come after me for this. That's a question. Is everybody required to file a tax return? There's a question. Is your three-year-old required to file a tax return? Is your three-year-old required to be a part of the federal welfare benefit program? Are you required by law to have your three-year-old involved in a federal welfare program? The penalty will be 2.5% of individuals' household income, but no less than $695. Wow. So it's at least a $695 penalty if you don't go purchase health insurance. And no more than the average yearly premium for insurance that covers 60% of the cost. La, la, la. It's hard to figure out what they're saying there. Okay, we got to take a break.